When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 241 of Wheel Bearings, we got the GMC Canyon AT4, the Audi RS e-tron GT, the Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo, the Rolls-Royce Spectre, Honda extends its CPO program to 10-year-old cars, the Toyota Corolla GR, increases corporate average fuel economy standards, and a whole bunch of questions from listeners. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 240 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I'm Roberto Baldwin from Forbes Wheels.
And unfortunately, Nicole could not be with us tonight because she is looking after her mom who had to go into the ER this morning. So hopefully her mom's going to be okay. And then unfortunately, the next several days, she'll be traveling as well. So that's why we couldn't reschedule.
Yeah, so it's just the boring dudes.
Yep. All right. So you were driving to something. We were both driving EVs this week, but I'm not going to talk about mine till next time. But you had some interesting stuff that you were driving this week.
I did drive the Hummer EV, but I can't talk about it. So
yeah, we've got a whole bunch of stuff that's still embargoed for another couple of weeks.
So we'll talk about that later. But what I was driving that I can talk about is the RS e-tron GT. This is the e-tron GT performance because the e-tron GT apparently just wasn't fast enough for out. And I'm like, you know what? Let's make it an RS. Let's make it bonkers. And that's what it is.
Well, that is what RS Audis are supposed to be, is bonkers, right?
That is exactly what they're supposed to be. So it's using the same architecture that is the Porsche Taycan. And when you have the regular Porsche Taycan, you have the regular e-tron GT, the Porsche is tuned a bit more aggressively. It's a Porsche. Audi's attuned a bit more. It's still, you know, a sports sedan, but it's not as aggressive as the Porsche. That said, the RS e-tron GT is tuned more aggressively than so you have this like really weird like where does this fit within the Volkswagen Group level of powerful EVs, and I still think there is I also drove a Taycan this week. So there is a bit more refinement for the e-tron, the RS e-tron GT, over the Porsche Taycan.
In what way?
It just feels more luxury brand, whereas Porsche always feels very performance brand. And that's even though it's very quick, it still feels it's still gonna pamper you. When you get inside, the seats are still comfortable. You still get all the the Audi accoutrements, and so it feels again it's really fast. It handles great, but there's just that little bit of Porsche like hardness that it is missing. And I think for most people, who want something fast but really want to be pampered, that's where the RS eTron GT comes in. It is, again, it's quick. It has 590 horsepower, but when you put it in boost mode, it's 637 horsepower. And it has 612 pound-feet of torque, which means no matter what you do, no matter how fast you're going, you just tap slightly on the accelerator and it'll push you back into your seat. I gave my neighbor a ride in it. He's a car guy. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, we'll feel this. And he's like, ah. I'm like, that is maybe 10% of me pushing down on the accelerator. So it is, yeah, it is very quick.
A little dabble do you.
A little dabble do you. I think, and it's a little dabble do most anyone. Yeah, it does have a launch, you know, boost mode. It does have launch control. I tried it out. It is ridiculous. It's quick. Again, these launch controls on these super quick EVs, they're really great for just showing off to your friend and then maybe never using it again. But where this thing it really shines is, you know, I took it, did some back roads driving, some twisties, and it felt very, very nice, very smooth. I do wish that there was a bit more feedback to the steering. The steering feedback's a little not that great. Still, it feels a little bit video gamey. Mm-hmm. But you know, that said, it's still a hoot behind the wheel. It has that two-speed transmission that Porsche has on the Taycan,
but only on the rear axle, right?
But only on the rear axle, which is really fun because when you get in an EV, it's just go. That's it. You don't have any sort of like ugh. And when you throw this thing in boost mode and you take off, you can feel the gear shifting. And that, I don't know, for some reason that just kind of feels fun because it's like, yeah. So the low end is for torque. The high end is to help you, you know, it's for, you know, going at high speeds. It's like your overdrive, mm-hmm. in your regular car, your fifth gear, sixth gear, whatever gear you have.
Keeps the rear motor in the peak of its efficiency range while still giving you all the torque you want.
Exactly. And, you know, so the Audi, it is Audi. Audi's the sort of the tech wunderkinds of the Volkswagen group. So a lot of tech sort of shows up on there. MMI, you know, it's a nice system because there's, you don't have to dig to get to things. You know, it's like one or two clicks. You know, you're not going into a bunch of deep menus in order to make adjustments, which is always nice. This one has, you know, it had the stoplight countdown, which when it was launched only worked in like Washington D.C. and Las Vegas. Now it apparently works around the Bay Area, so that's great. So you what happens is you come to a stoplight, and then in the dash cluster at the very bottom you see a little picture of the stoplight, has the red light, and then there's a countdown, like 40 seconds, 49 seconds, 40 whatever, which is great when you, let's say you have kids and you need to turn around and yell at them, or you, like me, you for some reason you keep putting your phone on the passenger seat and then it just goes sliding off and then you have to find it. And because I'm like, well, I'm not going to look for it now. I'm driving. So I come to the stoplight and then I'm just like rooting around looking for this lost cell phone that has gone, you know, wherever. It's actually quite nice, that countdown thing.
Yeah, that's something they started. They use the LTE connectivity in the car to get data from the local traffic signal management systems. And I think currently it works in about 18 or 19 different cities around the country. And like around here, I've found that it works at some intersections, but not at others. It seems to be very hit and miss.
It's very hit or miss, but when you find it, you're like, oh, it's kind of, yeah. So it's nice that it's rolling out, because I think it'll, if it's rolling out to more cities, because there's a good chance they would make this would come out and it would only be available in Las Vegas and Washington D.C. and that would be it, and they were like, oh, whatever. But apparently it's expanding, which means that this technology will make its way into other Volkswagen Group vehicles, but also into other vehicles overall. Other automakers are going to be like, well, people like to know how long they're stuck at a stoplight.
Well, one of the other cool features of that they added more recently is kind of the suggested speed.
Yeah,
indicator.
It'll say like 35 miles an hour to get to the green. I'm like, oh, this is great.
So they'll tell you, you know, if you drive at this speed, you'll hit the you'll keep hitting green lights. You know, so they'll tell you the right speed so you don't have to keep stopping all the time.
Yeah, the time lights, that's outstanding. There's a lot of time lights in San Francisco, and you sort of just learn like how fast you're supposed to go. And it's always fun to see people who are doing like 45 when the time lights are 35, and they rush to the next red light, and then you just cruise by them. The light turns green, then they rush to the next light, and you cruise by them. This makes it so you don't have to be a local in order to figure this out. You don't have to like, oh, I've lived here for 5 years, and now I know what all the time lights are in my city. You can sort of like, oh, if I just do 35 instead of, you know, accelerating to 45 or 50 to get to the next light, I won't have to stop. And that's, to be honest, that's just a better driving experience. Let's see. Oh, so it's what's nice is it's built on an 800 volt architecture, as charging up to 270 kilowatts. I got it to 264, 267. I don't know. I put it on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I got, I went to Electrify America. It charged as fast as it's supposed to. And that was very nice, because sometimes you go to a charging station and you have a 150 or a 50 or 200 or a 270, and it charges at like a quarter of the speed. And you're just like, boo, why did I get an 800-volt system if this isn't going to happen? The battery pack, 93 kilowatt hours. Of that, 84 kilowatt hours is usable. I have not done the math to tell you what the range is on my drive, but the RS e-tron GT, went from that 84 kilowatts of battery capacity that you're allowed to use, it'll do 232 miles according to the EPA. And I'm just going to tell you, I haven't even done the math, and I can guararantee you it beat that.
Most of the measured evaluations that have been done by some other outlets with both the e-tron and the Taycan have consistently showed that they do significantly better than their EPA ratings.
It is impressive. It was really weird when you know what, I'll talk about this when I talk about the Taycan in about 2 seconds. I can almost guarantee you it beat this this rating just because by. Yeah. So the RS e-tron GT, it is quick. It charges quick. The range that the EPA has is well under what you'll likely get, unless you're driving like a maniac nonstop. And even then, you might just still get over. You'll likely still get over 200 miles. The Volkswagen Group, as a whole, seems to be making sure that their vehicles do better than the EPA. The adjustment factors that they are using are different from what Tesla is using, which is why when people test Teslas, the Tesla usually underperforms while Volkswagen Group vehicles overperform. It's a whole thing. There's actually a really good article on Car and Driver about the entire system. So, and then I drove another vehicle based on the exact same platform, the Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo 4. Or Ooh. Turismo, not Turismo. let me start that over. The Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo 4. There we go. The wagon. The best car in the world is a wagon. Wagons are great. You should all buy more wagons. That said, this thing is outstanding. It's quick. It's solid. It handles better than you would anticipate for a large wagon. It has what's weird is that the e-tron, Audi has dual displays, and the e-tron GT, there's only a single display. Meanwhile, in the Porsche, there is dual displays. The display on the bottom takes care of your climate controls. It's also a touchpad that you can use to sort of move things around on the top display. You can also write things in there, you know, finger with handwriting. It's a weird decision, considering one, you know, one part of the Volkswagen Group is the part that came up with this, and the second part is the part of the Volkswagen Group is like, oh, that seems like a good idea. But the first part is like, yeah, we're not going to do that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of actual buttons when it comes to climate control, but yeah, it worked. It's fine. You know, you can up, down. You know, I was able to write like an address, and it did a really good job. This, you know, figuring out what my horrible chicken scratch is. So yeah, it's fine. It has a normal mode, it has sport mode. It's really easy to put in sport mode. It's just a button on that bottom display. What's weird is that there's like an eco mode and a gravel mode, and you actually have to go into the infotainment system and go to the vehicle setting for modes to turn those on. So I guess they're assuming you're not going to turn those on very often. The gravel mode is nice because it lifts the vehicle up. You can drive on gravel, which you shouldn't do in any other Porsche that's not an SUV. And yet I'm driving around in a wagon and it lifts it up. And what's also cool is that if you keep lifting up the vehicle, like I kept lifting it to put it in my driveway, it learns. It figures out, hey, you know what?
So it tracks where you are. And if you keep doing it at the same location, it'll...
Yep. It lifts as I'm pulling up to my house, which is kind of nice. Which to be honest, I probably didn't have to do to pull into my driveway. But it's always nice when I don't have to like drive really slow to get, you know, to get over a little hump to put any sort of sports car in my driveway. So that's great. You can get roof rails and a bike rack for this. Which is, you know, it's a wagon, so it's really like the outdoorsy.
It's a lifestyle vehicle.
It's a wagon. It's a wagon. And
Americans won't buy wagons. They buy lifestyle vehicles.
Americans should be proud to drive wagons.
I agree.
If it's good enough for the Griswolds, it's good enough for you. That's my...
Yeah.
It has a two-speed... the two-speed transmission, again, you know, talked about with the RS e-tron GT. It's great. It has a launch control. It's, the 0 to 60 is 4.8 seconds. It's not, you know, crazy, but it's still a wagon. there's lots of, I could sit in the back seats, which is nice. It also supports DC fast charging up to 270 kilowatts. I took it to the same EEA station. It peaked at like 200 something, and then... And again, this is more, I mean, it's the same, you know, on both vehicles, I prepped the battery by setting the charge station within the navigation. And so when you do that, the vehicle starts, you know, warming up the battery, so it'll charge quicker. Once you do all that, it's, again, the same architecture, same platform, it's really on EA at that point that it's not doing it.
So when you do that, do you just set a charger as your destination? Then it knows, okay, I'm going to a charger, and then it'll automatically start doing that preconditioning as you approach that destination.
Yeah. You can while you're looking in the navigation. There's locations that you've been to. There's locations you can search, and then there's just a button that shows like a picture of the little, you know, the fueling station. You click that for chargers, and it shows you all the chargers. Mm-hmm. And you can use the Porsche app, which I actually also used. And with the Porsche app, you can see the max kilowatts for each charge station that you're looking for in the area or location. And I know this because I have to go over the bridge for this other to get 350 as opposed to staying on my side of the bay. And so I just click on that, and then I sent it to the vehicle, and I got in the vehicle, and I hit navigation to search, and it's like, hey, here's the thing, the place you want to go. And so, yeah, so it knows that you're going to a charging station. If you don't tell it, if you just, like, use Apple CarPlay in order to go to a charge station, it has to warm up, so it won't be ready to take in all those electrons as quickly as it could. As a 93.4 kilowatt hour capacity battery, 83.7 is usable. And where is it? Okay, so the EPA is 215. It's lower, it's a little bit heavier, you know. My test, 262.
That's okay. I wouldn't complain about that.
262. And this is, I mean, the way I do my tests is it's the exact same route for every vehicle. There are some deviations, but those deviations don't really make a difference because it's mostly, at that point, I'm driving on surface roads in the suburbs. Like, one of these vehicles, there was like a police presence thing where they blocked all the roads for like a 3-block radius. I was like, I guess I'm going this way. But the loop is, it's a 100 miles. 50% of it or 50 miles of it is on the freeway with the cruise control set at 70 miles an hour. And of course, you know, a few times it'll sort of slow down because of traffic. But for the most part, I do these in the middle of the day. There's very little traffic. I'm actually going the opposite of traffic, that if there were traffic, because I'm going away from San Francisco and Oakland on this. And then on the way back, I drive mountain roads, twisty mountain roads, and then I also drive suburban roads. And that's about, let's say it's 50 miles, 20 miles like mountain roads, and then like 30 miles suburban roads. So the second part of the drive takes forever. Well, the first part is just like, oh, it's 50 miles, 50 minutes, or less than that. And yeah, with this 262 miles, I kept checking my math because I wasn't quite sure. But yeah, again, you know, the Volkswagen Group is very much, they want to make sure that they're beating that number, so they're going with the lower EPA number. And you know, I mean, I can't understand what reason Volkswagen would have to want to look cleaner than they actually are.
No, I mean, they've never done anything that would ever cause anybody to doubt, you know, what they're doing.
Exactly. Right? They've never done anything like that.
Like they've never sold, you know, vehicles with diesel engines that maybe, you know, pollute more than they're supposed to, or, you know, done anything like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, this is the 4. It wasn't the 4S. It wasn't Turbo 4S. It has 375 horsepower, 469 horsepower with launch control. Put in launch control, drove really fast. It was really fun. 368 pound-feet of torque, which is it is a quick vehicle. It's still a Porsche. It does feel, even though it's not the, you know, the RS e-tron GT is a faster vehicle, this one felt tighter. It still has that Porsche suspension tuning that you expect. And on one of my, you know, so I have like different routes that I do, and one of them is the performance driving route, and it's these roads out to the beach and back in the middle of the day, again, no one's around. And on this one, a Ferrari was behind me, and I kept up with the Ferrari, and then we pulled over, and the gentleman was very like, whoa. And of course, I drive a lot, so I'm better than the average driver. I'm not the I'm definitely not the fastest journalist out there. I'm far from that. But like the regular driver, you know, he was very impressed. And he actually, the person told me that they had a rear-wheel drive sedan, Taycan, on order that they were waiting for. So I think he was very excited to see how well it does. Let's see, what else? 800-volt system. Yeah, it's a wagon, so you can put lots of stuff in the back. I stuck a TV in the back of it that I had to take to my band's practice space. I really, really, really like this vehicle. You know, it's got plug and charge. There's chargers on each side of the vehicle. There's charge ports on each side of the vehicle for AC charging. The DC fast charging is only on the passenger side. But, like, however you park, if you park at home, like, you don't have to, like, oh, no, let me hold on, I got to turn around. Let's just plug it on either side. Do what you want.
With the wagon-style roofline on it, does it have more headroom in the back seat than the standard?
Yeah, I think it has more headroom in the back seat than the standard. I haven't been in the standard in, like, a year and a half. Wow, how long ago was that? 2 years? Oh, my gosh. I can't remember. It's, you know. I don't understand how time works because of COVID,
yeah,
the lockdown. But yeah, it has more headroom in the back because with that roof line, and yeah, it's just if you're rich and you need a family vehicle and you just don't want to look like absolutely everyone else on the road, which everyone else on the road has an SUV. Every time someone like, well, SUVs are cool, I'm like, no, they're not. They're basic. I'm sorry. They are. They're just, it's what your mom is driving. It's what your cousin's driving. Everyone has an SUV for reasons. And I understand the reasons. As you get older, it's great to have an SUV. It's easier to get in and out of. You can put your stuff in the back. But,
well, I would say that's true for, you know, crossovers, but not like, you know, true SUVs that actually sit up higher.
Oh, the big giant ones, which no one, which those people buy those and they just keep them clean forever.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that wagon was great. The gravel mode's great. You're going to have it's a hoot to drive.
And if you want something, you know, like this that is, you know, just a little bit taller, you know, it is going to be a little easier to get in and out of. Porsche also offers the Taycan Cross Turismo, which is the same thing as the Sport Turismo, but with, you know, a little bit of extra ride height and some...
That's what I had. I didn't have the Sport Turismo.
You had the Cross Turismo? Okay.
Yeah, I don't have the Sport. I'm not that lucky.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the Sport Turismo sits at the same height as the sedan. The Cross Turismo is just a wee bit taller.
This is the 4. It's not even the fast one.
Yeah.
It's not the 4S. It's not the, you know, it's not the Sport Turismo. And it's really nice. And the starting price is $90,100, delivery $1,350. I don't have the Monroney for this vehicle. Sometimes I just don't get them.
But in classic, you know, Porsche fashion, you know, injudicious use of the options list can inflate that starting price very, very rapidly.
Yeah. If you start throwing things on there, it's gonna get like, yeah. It's
it can get ugly very quickly.
Yes, exactly. It can get ugly very, very quickly, or beautiful. You know, however, you know, it depends on your bank account.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's true. Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I had something a little bit different from that. I had the 2022 GMC Canyon AT4. The Canyon is the sibling to the Chevy Colorado. These are GM's midsize pickup trucks. They compete with the likes of the Ford Ranger, sort of the Honda Ridgeline, and a few others. The Canyon's getting a little long in the tooth. Yeah, it's been around for a while in its current form. The AT4 is the sort of off-road, all-terrain type model, hence AT, four-wheel drive. It's not the maximum, you know, high-end version, which I think is the Bison is the Canyon version. Chevy's got the ZR2, and I think the Canyon, they have the Bison trim, which is got the fancy Multimatic shocks on there with the remote reservoirs, or it's not the remote reservoirs, or is it? Anyway, it doesn't matter. I didn't have that one.
Have the Bison, which is a weird animal to choose because it's essentially just a really fuzzy like cow, but okay.
Yeah, with kind of a hunchback to it. But yeah. At any rate, the AT4, you know, sits up higher. Has, you know, big knobbly tires on it. You can get it with a 2.5-liter four-cylinder engine. Mine had the 3.6-liter V6 engine with an 8-speed automatic transmission. And let's just say this thing's not very fuel efficient in this form.
So I like, it says plug and charge. You get free charging at Electrify America. It wasn't set up on the e-tron GT, but when I filled it, it was like $23. So tell me how much it was to fill your, or at least guess.
It would, let's see. If I put a full tank in here, I think it would be about, let's see, four, 20 times four, about $80 or $90. For a full tank.
More.
Yes, quite a bit more. And you would have to do it quite a bit more frequently. This thing is EPA rated at 17 city, 24 highway, 19 combined. I drove it around. Most of my driving was actually highway driving. I did do some around town driving. But even with mostly highway driving, this thing only got about 16.5 miles per gallon. Which for a mid-sized truck is really mediocre. Granted, it was cold when I got it. You know, I returned home from somewhere on a red-eye flight, I think. And
see, that's why you don't remember. It's red-eye. It's okay. Yeah. You returned from a plane.
No, actually, it wasn't. That was the second time I came back while I had it. When I first picked it up, I got back in the afternoon. And it was still about 19 degrees out. So it was cold. So I would expect it to be, you know, lower fuel economy. But still, 16, 17 miles per gallon, you know, in a mid-sized truck is really kind of disappointing. The other thing that really disappointed me about this thing was the seats. The seats were really quite uncomfortable, not very supportive. The lower seat cushions were short. There was almost no lateral support. There's an inflatable lumbar support, but I couldn't really get it into a good position where it felt good for my back. It was not a comfortable seat to sit in for any length of time. Mm-hmm. And the rear seats, you know, this was a crew cab version, with the short bed. The rear seats also don't have a whole lot of leg room. You know, it seems like this one is shorter than the Ranger. The Ranger rear seats have a little bit, I think, feel like they're a little bit more spacious than on the Canyon in Colorado. That said, you know, a lot of the other stuff about this thing is actually pretty decent. You know, it's a good looking truck, even though it's been around on the market for a few years. It got a mid-cycle update a couple of years ago. The one I had was in cayenne red tint coat, with a jet black interior. It had the older version of GM's infotainment system on an 8-inch screen. The center touch screen is kind of, it's embedded in the center console and it's set back kind of deep. So it's not really flush mounted, which, if you're trying to hit the stuff, you know, towards the bottom of the screen is a little awkward sometimes getting your finger in there to hit the touch targets, you know, for things on the bottom. But, you know, the system works fine. It's got support for Android Auto and Apple CarPlay, although not wireless. And it had navigation in there. There's, as part of the AT4 package, you get a two-speed transfer case with four-wheel drive low as well as four-wheel drive high for off-roading. It does have the off-road suspension package. Like I said, not as sophisticated as the Bison or ZR2, but you know, it's still a pretty decent package. This one didn't have adaptive cruise control or many of the other driver assist features, which are available but extra cost options on the Canyon. And base price on a two-wheel drive extended cab Canyon starts around $27,000, but this one that I drove came out to a grand total of $46,700.
Oh my God!
Yeah, so going for the off-road stuff really cranks up the price. Like the base price of the AT4 is $40,200, and you know then the options that were on this thing. You know, the AT4 off-road performance edition package added $3,200. The gloss black wheels, the infotainment with navigation was another $1,000, and there's a few other things that really jacked the price up. For this price, you know, I think generally the interior of this one does feel more premium than the Ranger. I haven't seen the new Ranger, the next generation Ranger, in person yet, but the previous gen Ranger, it's hard plastics. When I've had one before, I had a Lariat one time a couple of years ago that was $43,000, and it does not feel like a $43,000 vehicle. This one, the materials and the fit and finish, feel more like a $40,000 plus vehicle. But my big complaint really is the seats, which really were not good. As we always say, if you're going to buy something, make sure you sit in it, drive it first, because everybody's body's different. I'm sure there are people out there for whom these seats will feel great. I'm not one of them. But if you're interested in this, make sure you go check it out. It's got, let's see, what is the towing capability? It's got decent towing capabilities and payload. You can also get this, with a 2.8 liter, four-cylinder turbo diesel. GM still is selling diesel engines in their light trucks, which is handy. Let's see. Max payload is about 1,400 pounds with the crew cab and the short box, and four-wheel drive. Trailering, you can tow up to 7,000 pounds with this thing. Actually, depending on how it's configured, with the diesel, you can actually get 7,700 pounds. So V6 is 7,000 pounds. The diesel is 7,700 pounds. You can actually use this thing as a truck. Mm-hmm. The bed, like I said, the bed's a little on the short side. It's only 5'2" long. You can also get it with a 6'2" box. If you need more space for stuff. It's a pricey off-road truck. Now, granted, $47,000 for this, compared to a Jeep Gladiator, if you want an off-road mid-size pickup truck, Gladiator can easily cost you a lot more than this, especially if you go for something like the Mojave. From a value standpoint, compared to the competition, it's actually not that bad. So that's the 2022 GMC Canyon AT4.
If you just get a cheap Jeep, you can get it for like 37. But good luck figuring out how that's going to
Yeah. I don't know if you can actually buy one of those. I think those are a theoretical thing. They list them on the build-in price, but it's kind of like buying a $90,000 Taycan. I don't think you can actually do it.
You could, but it'll sink in the ocean.
Oh, that's it, of course.
That's where it goes. They're like, I'm sorry. It's a $35,000
Tesla. The ship catches fire and it sinks in the bottom of the Atlantic.
They're like, sorry.
All right. Let's go through a few stories of the week. Before we do that, the car I'm going to talk about next week is the Mini Cooper SE electric. And I'll talk about that one next time. But I took it to my local Electrify America station this afternoon after I took it for a drive to do some range evaluation. And my local station here has 6 bays. And at most, I've only ever seen one other vehicle using it at a time. And I was shocked today when I got there and there were 3 other EVs all plugged in there, which was really impressive. There was a Kia Niro EV, which I don't think, other than a press car, I don't think I've ever seen one around here before. There was also a VW ID4, and there was a Mustang Mach-E, which was from the Ford Charge Angels team. Back last October, after driving the Mach-E GT, the episode after that, I had an interview with Darren Palmer where he talked about the Charge Angels stuff. And this is a program that Ford started doing after they launched the Mach-E last year, and they were getting a lot of complaints from customers about being guided to stations where the chargers weren't working. And so what they did was they set up this team, and they also did a software update to the cars so that whenever an owner plugs in their Ford EV and connects, if it doesn't start a charging station without some kind of error, or a charging session without an error, it will gather all the data and send it back to Ford. And then Ford will actually take that charger off of their out of their FordPass app database. So it, for other owners, it won't guide them to that charger until it's been fixed. And they also have the Charge Angels team that actually goes around and physically evaluates and tests all the chargers. They've got a team around here that's based out of Dearborn of about five or six teams that go out all over Michigan and the surrounding states. They happen to be at mine. They were going through each one of the bays this afternoon, checking them all to see if they charged correctly, how fast they charged. And turns out one of the chargers, which I was actually at a couple days ago as well, was not working then, and it still wasn't working today, and they were aware of that and had notified EA to get that fixed. So good on Ford for doing the Charge Angels program. It's a real thing.
Yeah. I think most people, what happens is they go to a charge, you know, they go to the location, they plug in a charger, it doesn't work, they just go to the next one.
Yeah.
They just keep going down the line until they get one that works, and then that's it. Sometimes I'll open up the EA app and I'm like, wrong, this one's wrong.
Yeah.
I'll report a problem. But that's because, you know, I'm a nerd. I think most people just want to get their car like charged, and I think this is great that Ford's doing this.
They're holding it automatically.
EA and EVgo and ChargePoint, all the charging companies, it kind of holds them to account.
Yep.
If,
and that's, you know, that's what they need to do.
Because that's where the dream of the EV is sort of falling short still, is when you go to a charging station and it's like, oh, I just can't fill it up like I do my car. I have to, you know, fiddle with all this weirdness, and then, oh, this one doesn't work. Let me go to the next one. And then some, you know, there's all these people there and they're like, oh, that one doesn't work. Don't use that one. Go to this one.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of more EVs, there's a new one coming out next year that most of us will probably never get to own or drive. It's from a brand that's never done a production EV before. It's the Rolls-Royce Spectre. And Rolls released some video footage of it testing in northern Sweden earlier this week. What do you think of the Spectre?
I mean, the EVs and luxury just seems to go hand in hand as far as I'm concerned, just because you're removing, there's a lot of stuff that happens that I think most people don't realize when these luxury brands are building gas vehicles. They have subframes that they're trying to, so you have a frame within a frame in order to reduce the vibration from the motor. You know, you're putting all this sound insulation so you can't hear the motor while you're driving around in your fancy car, and you know, all the stuff that they're doing in order to make the interior of these luxury vehicles, you don't have to do as much when you have an EV.
Well, and Rolls-Royce, you know, like right from the very beginning of the company over 100 years ago, you know, it's always been about, you know, this quiet, silent drive. I mean, that's why Rolls-Royce cars have names like Phantom and Shadow and Ghost and now Spectre. You know, they want to give that impression of quietness and smoothness. And it seems like an electric powertrain and a Rolls-Royce, you couldn't find a better fit.
Yeah. And I also like the fact that they have a thesaurus of all the ghosts in the world.
Yeah.
I think people are going to be very very happy with this, and you know, a lot of Rolls-Royces for decades it was essentially you bought a Rolls-Royce and you had somebody else drive you. Now they're sort of like realizing, like, oh, some of these people actually want to drive these vehicles, and then they drag their friends around, or they, I don't know, make their friend drive them around.
Yeah, I mean, I think most owners of Phantoms probably don't drive them. They have somebody who drives them around. But you know, cars like the Ghost and the Dawn. The Dawn was the Ghost, the coupe version of the Ghost, I think.
Yeah. I've driven the Ghost.
And now, you know, the Spectre, you know, is, you know, it's a coupe, which looks like a replacement for that. And as I said, this is coming next year. It's most likely using a modified version of the new BMW 7 Series platform, which is also going to be available as the i7, as an electric sedan. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, it looks like a modern Rolls-Royce.
Yeah.
Even with the camo on it, you can tell it's a Rolls.
Yeah. And having driven the i4 and the iX, the BMW group's EVs are, I just felt like there was this huge lull between the i3 and the i8 and then what's happening now. And during that sort of downtime, well, it wasn't downtime, they were working on stuff, but for, you know, vehicles being in the market sort of downtime, they've done a lot of work. And those vehicles, they drive so well. So I'm assuming they cushioned it up and made it fancy. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to drive this, but I think Rolls-Royce customers will likely be very happy.
For those of us who can't afford Rolls-Royces...
Everyone...
yeah, Honda and Acura are doing more to help you out as well. They have expanded their certified pre-owned program. Traditionally, these CPO programs from automakers, this is where they take used cars. It's mostly off-lease cars and in some cases trade-ins that are usually no more than 3 or 4 years old. They go through, they do a, you know, thorough cleaning, refurbishment, you know, replace, you know, upgrade, you know, put in new brakes and, you know, all the other stuff and make sure everything's working properly. And then they sell it with a warranty at usually a premium over a comparable used example of the same car that hasn't gone through the CPO process. Mm-hmm. And in the past, they've usually been no more than 3 or 4 years old. And it's been a nice option for somebody that, you know, can't quite swing a new car, but they still want to be able to get a warranty, have the confidence of a warranty and something that's nearly new, that's still relatively fresh.
You don't bring it home and you realize you need brakes in 5,000 miles.
Yeah. Or that, the transmission was filled with sawdust to keep the grinding sounds at bay until you got outside of range of the dealer you bought it from. Now they've expanded their CPO programs to include cars up to 10 years old. I think part of this is just, you know, to be able to, you know, get more cars into the program. You know, one of the things with the price premium that you pay for a CPO car is actually very profitable for both the automakers and the dealers that sell these things. You know, they have quite a bit higher margin than what a regular used car would be. And they, so it's been they've liked doing these things, you know, and it's a way for them to take, especially the off lease cars and move those out and, you know, get them off the books. but now, you know, cars have gotten so, durable over the last 20, 25 years. You know, the average age of cars on the road in the U.S. now is over 12 years old. So they're taking 10-year-old cars and doing the CPO deal on them and selling them through Honda and Acura dealers.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, a Honda Acura, I mean, they have a reputation for lasting forever, and it's a well-deserved reputation. I mean, you know, and if you're looking for, especially now where just everything is too expensive, and you're like, you're sort of getting priced out of 2 and 3 year old cars. If you want a car 7 years old, but you also want to know that it's not going to break down as you pull off the lot, I mean, this is a nice, you know, you're paying a premium for it that you wouldn't pay on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace or from the guy down the street with the weird used car lot, which you should never buy cars from those places, by the way. those are the car lot. Those are the cars that the dealerships don't want. They sell them at auctions and those. They get picked up and then they sell them to you.
Unless you know the guy down the street, you know.
If you know the guy,
you know the history of the car.
Yeah, if you know the guy and you can get a Carfax. Long story short, if you can get an older car that's been, you know, fancied up and cleaned up and you know, you're gonna feel less. You're not gonna have the anxiety of like, well, I bought a used car. Who knows what's gonna happen in a year? This is a nice little option for you.
Yeah, and you get 100-day, 5,000-mile warranty on it, complimentary oil changes for 12 months, roadside assistance, trip interruption expense reimbursement, and concierge services. So, yeah, it's almost like buying a new car, except that it's not.
It's not. So, yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's I mean, it's good for the dealers because now they can get more inventory that looks premium on their lot, and it's good for Honda because they can say, hey, look, our cars last 100 years. And it's good for you and me because we can't afford new cars or even used cars.
Yeah.
How old is my car? What year is this? 2022?
Mine's 32 years old now.
My BRZ is 8 years old. I can sell for more than what I bought it when I bought it. I bought it used like 3 years ago, but yeah, that's just ridiculous.
All right. There is another new car that popped up this week. For those that attended the Honda BRZ, the last wave of the Honda BRZ media drive in San Diego, they got to go to an extra event. I was on the first wave on Monday. Those like Nicole, who went later in the week, got to see the new Toyota Corolla GR, which is the latest hot hatch from Toyota. This thing looks pretty slick. 300 horsepower, all-wheel drive. It's a 1.6-liter three-cylinder turbo. So this thing is screaming. You know, it's almost 200 horsepower per liter. Which is a lot.
100 horsepower per cylinder.
Yeah.
Every cylinder gives you 100 horsepower. Every cylinder is more powerful than my 1990 Honda Civic.
Yeah. This thing is based on technology from the Toyota Rally cars. In the press release here says, born from rally racing and tested to meet the highest standards set by master driver Akio Toyota and professional Toyota Gazoo Racing drivers. So, Akio Toyota, the CEO of Toyota, is a very skilled driver. You know, he has raced at Le Mans and elsewhere. And he personally evaluates most of these cars before they get signed off. And let's see, does it say how much they're going to charge for this thing?
Too much. Pricing will be announced later
this year. Yeah. So it's, this is kind of, in the absence of a new STI from Subaru, this is Toyota's response saying, Subaru's not going to build it. We'll build our own. So it's got big flared fenders. The wing on the tail on the hatchback is not quite as crazy as a Civic Type R. With four-wheel drive, you don't have to worry about torque steer either.
Yep. No torque steer, manual, six-speed manual. More powerful than the WRX, and the power to weight ratio is going to be ridiculous. And so the WRX starts at like 30-ish. So I'm guessing this will probably start about, maybe if we're lucky, fingers crossed, you can get this thing for 35.
That would be nice.
Nice high hatch.
I'm skeptical. I think it's probably going to be closer to 40.
Oh yeah, it's going to be closer. But it'd be nice if it was starting.
Based on the price of the last Focus RS, which started at 35 and went up from there. I'm guessing this will probably be closer to 40.
And then it's going to have a $20,000 markup. And
yeah.
But we can.
You also get a triple exhaust, though. One for each cylinder.
Yeah, one for each cylinder. Every cylinder gets its own exhaust. Every cylinder gets 100 horsepower of its own. All-wheel drive, big six-speed. It's like everything that you wanted out of the GR Yaris, but we're not getting the GR Yaris. So like, hey, here's a Corolla.
Yeah. Well, the Yaris is probably a little too small for the U.S. market, so you're giving us this instead.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
I wouldn't complain.
Yeah, we shouldn't complain. We could have complained up until this point.
Yeah. We can complain after we drive it.
Yes. They did such a the GR86 and the new GR86 and the BRZ are so great. I can't see how they can mess this up.
Yeah, no. Based on what I've heard of the GR Yaris, this thing should be fantastic because it's a lot of the same components, just in a slightly larger body.
Yeah. I think they're. We can give Toyota, we can hassle them about their slowness to the EV world, but they are giving us the fun cars that have been missing from the market outside of the WRX and the STI for quite a while.
Yep. All right. Last news item is NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which is responsible for enforcing fuel economy standards, is this week announced the new standards for 2024, 25, and 26, basically reversing the policy changes that were made under the prior administration in Washington, which rolled back fuel economy standards, actually going further than what had been originally proposed back under the Obama administration. So now the new standards, by 2026, manufacturers will have to hit 47 miles per gallon fleet average, which that's based on the old two-cycle EPA tests. So real-world mileage and label mileage will be closer to about 40 miles per gallon. Just as a point of reference, this year, or let's see, 2020, I think the average for all manufacturers in the U.S. was about 27 or 28 miles per gallon. At the bottom of the list was Stellantis at a little bit shy of 21 miles per gallon, which is why last week, you know, we talked about the new engine, the new Hurricane engine that they're launching, their new 3-liter twin turbo six cylinder. Because even though there's not going to be many more new internal combustion engines, they still need to get more efficient. So this is going to be a tough standard for manufacturers to hit. They've got to increase 8%.
For some.
For some. They've got 8% annual increases in 2024 and 25, and 10% in model year 2026. I think the only way that they're really going to hit this is by selling a lot of electric vehicles, which most of them are planning to try and do, assuming they can build enough batteries.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think people will probably be a lot angrier about this if they weren't looking at the every time they fill up the tank, they had to take out another loan.
Yeah, yeah. If you weren't looking at, you know, anywhere from $4 to $6 or more a gallon for gas, you know, they'd probably be a little more pissed off. But
they're probably like, then they're like, oh, you know. Why can't they make these things more efficient? And I'm like, well, you know, they can. It's just easier not to, and now they kind of have to.
Yeah. So
meanwhile, my wife was unaware of the pricing, the jump in pricing and gas prices, because she hasn't.
Oh, because she's driving the Kona.
Because she's been driving, the Kona EV for 6 months, and so she didn't know until about a week ago. She's like drove by, so like, what's going on?
It's nice to be blissfully ignorant of those sorts of things, isn't it?
Yeah. She was just sort of like, she knew everything was going on in the world, but, you know, she didn't have that real world. And she's like, I just drove by and I look at it. It's like, six what?
Okay. Well, let's answer some questions. The first one is actually one that came in last week. And Adam J., a.k.a. at Gifted Napper on Twitter, I did not forget your question last week. I actually had it, but I wanted to do a little research and get an answer for you first, which I did. I reached out to a few automakers and got some responses on this. So the question Adam had was about, can you explain why 12-volt batteries keep dying in EVs? This happened 1,200 miles into mine, and seems to be common in the new crop of crossovers. ID4, Mach-E, Ioniq 5 have all had many reports of this. Why can't the 12-volt trickle charge from the giant battery pack if it's low? So short answer is they actually do while the vehicle's running. They do, you know, on an internal combustion vehicle, you've got an alternator that when the engine's running, it's driving the alternator, which is generating electricity, and that's providing electrical power for the vehicle systems, and it's also charging your battery, you know, which is only used for starting. On an EV, you've got a DC to DC converter that's stepping down from 400 or 800 volts, depending on what kind of system you've got in the car, and stepping that down to 12 volts to charge your battery. The problem we've had with some EVs is that the batteries are getting depleted. The 12-volt batteries are getting depleted. And the reason why they still have a 12-volt battery in there is to power those same systems that are in gas engine cars that mostly run on low voltage. They don't, you know, the only things that run on high voltage in an EV are the motors that drive the vehicle. Everything else runs at 12 or in some cases 5 volts. And so you still have this battery that needs to be trickle charged to power up those systems, especially when you start up the car. So from one automaker, I heard that one of the things that they don't do is when the car is parked, and you turn it off, they don't keep charging the 12-volt battery. They actually open up the high-voltage contacts from the battery that go to the DC to DC converter for safety reasons. They don't want to have energy flowing out of the high-voltage battery when the car is sitting there parked. That could lead to some very bad effects. So most of the time, what's happening, if the 12-volt battery is dying on you while the car is sitting there parked, it's probably because there's some problem somewhere, just like in a gas car. Something is draining that battery and causing it to get run down. And if that is happening consistently, time and time again, and it's discharging the battery too much, that can cause damage to the battery. And eventually, the battery won't be able to hold a charge anymore. And then you have to replace the battery. So when when those high voltage contactors are opened up, the system can't charge the battery. One thing he did mention was that there is potential for an autonomous recharge function that could wake the car up periodically, check on the 12-volt battery, and close the contacts if charging is necessary, so the DC to DC converter can run. So basically, every once in a while, the car will just wake itself up. See, is that 12-volt, is the 12-volt battery at 10 volts, 9 volts? Okay, I better put some juice into that. When it's done charging, then the high-voltage system can turn itself off. Another manufacturer told me that they have an auxiliary battery saver mode that activates, and this is when the car is running, activates a maximum of 20 minutes. And if the... if this battery saver mode, actually this was Hyundai. This is actually straight out of their owner's manual. If the battery saver function activates more than 10 times in a row, meaning that if it turns on for 20 minutes and charges up the battery and then does that 10 times in a row because the battery is still low, then the system will actually stop activating, judging that there's a problem with the battery. Because if after 10 times, which would be 200 minutes, so about 3 hours, it still can't get the 12-volt battery up to the right level, then it'll assume that there's something wrong with the battery and give you a diagnostic fault. And then the next time you go to cycle the ignition to start the vehicle, not cycling the ignition, but next time you go start the vehicle, it'll reset and it'll try again. And if the battery is still low, then it'll start giving you a fault, and then you have to take it and get it checked out. But the main reason why it's not continuously charging the 12-volt battery is for safety reasons.
There you go. And also, that's why you have a battery. So, everything, you can't have a 800 volts just like blasting into your everything else in the car.
Yeah. All right. Daryl asked, this may be out of your expertise level. No, nothing's out of our expertise level. We'll provide answers to anything. We can't guarantee that they're of any value, but we will provide you answers. when will charging ports be part of new home builds? I'm surprised it hasn't been, or at least in my area. Well, I think in California, they actually did change the law. And for new home builds, they do have to include level 2 charging capability, isn't that right?
Oh, sure. My house was built in 1961, so I don't know what.
For new ones, new builds in California, they do have to include that.
Good. I think what might have kept it to stop this from happening was that there was a couple, you know, you had Chatamo, you had level one. I think everyone had to just sort of decide, okay, how are we going to charge these cars? And I think we've all sort of hit on CCS, you know, that the DC fast charging, you know, the little circle with a little oval underneath it, that, you know, it's on every car now.
Except for Teslas.
So, you know, I think that's, you know, once we got to something that everyone could agree on and something that everyone could agree would be able to, you know, we could scale up to, you know, it's up to 800 volts. And, you know, you could probably go higher, but I don't think you probably need to really at this point, outside of maybe industrial use. So yeah, I can see that. And then again, you know, it's not completely inexpensive, but you can still just, like, you know, put a 240 on your house, throw it on a 50 amp
and
circuit.
I think that's what they are mandating, is not necessarily that a charger has to be installed, but there has to be a 240 volt circuit somewhere either on the outside of the house or the garage to hook up a charger to. Then you can connect whatever charger you want to.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's perfect then. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah, no, I think that's probably the way to go for now.
And I think more and more, I think this is the case in California, and I'm pretty sure other states will be doing this in the next couple of years, that, you know, mandating. And, you know, if you're getting a new car or a new home built, you know, if you're buying a new built house, you know, that's probably one of those things now that you should think about, you know, having the builder install, you know, is put a 240 volt outlet, at least one 240 volt outlet in your garage. You know, just like, you know, if probably a good idea to pre-wire the house, or, you know, set up the house with some conduit to run Ethernet cable everywhere. You know, put 240 volt outlets in the garage, just as a matter of course now.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you don't get an EV, just think of all the cool things you can power from it.
That's right. You can power some real serious tools off of that.
You can run an RV off of it.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. So if you're like, the hell with EVs for whatever reason, I don't know, buy an RV and you can have someone living in your garage or in your front yard.
Okay. The next two questions are related. We got one email from Alan Patton. Says, for a few years, I've noticed the trend of ever larger wheels on cars and SUVs. I don't get it. Larger wheels are heavier, leading to slower steering and possibly less feel. Sidewalls on these dubs are usually extremely thin, short, which can have jarring ride unless well damped, and potholes become a potential damage-causing hazards. Are these large wheels just a vanity fad that got out of hand? What's your take? And Andrew Pappas asked basically the same thing. Will we see a trend to smaller wheels for better range?
It's design. The designers at the automakers are like, well, people, this is what people like. Because we tell them, you're like, you know, if you had a, you know, instead of a 22, if you put a 19 on here with a larger side wheel, the ride would be much better. And they're like, yeah, but this is what people want.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to when I was young, you know, most cars had, you know, 13 or 14 inch wheels on them. And, you know, one of the reasons why they started going to, you know, larger, at least 15s or 16s, you know, which were large for that time, you know, I'm old, was to allow more room for bigger brakes. That was one of the primary reasons originally. But it turns out, you know, most people actually liked the way they looked better. You know, now you look at most of these cars, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, I mean, there are some high performance cars that'll have 15 or 16 inch brake rotors in there. And so they need, you know, 19 or 20 inch wheels to accommodate that. But, you know, most cars and trucks with 20s, you know, still have smaller brakes in there. They certainly don't need the space for the brakes, but it is mostly for design.
It looks pretty. That's really what it comes down to. And if you look at all, like, if you go to any, automotive design school, every vehicle that the designers are coming up with have these giant wheels with these really thin, like, with, like, zero sidewall.
Yeah, well, you know, when Chevy showed us the Silverado EV back in December, they showed the RST version, which is the high-end street truck version. It's riding on 24-inch wheels, which is it's ridiculous. Nobody needs 24-inch wheels.
You don't need it.
You know, when you see some of these other aftermarket wheels, you know, like 26, 30 inch wheels. You know, it's just, it's purely for aesthetics. You know, not that I would necessarily agree that, you know, the aesthetics are good, but, you know, people like the way they look. It's a style thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a style thing. And remember, words are hard. Remember, the larger sidewall, the less drain your ride is going to be.
Yeah, and those wheels are also really heavy. You're adding a lot more unsprung mass at the corner there. So when you hit a pothole or a bump, that's a lot more mass that's got to move, and so you're going to feel that a lot more than you would with smaller wheels with bigger, you know, taller sidewalls, and it will impact things like range, you know, or fuel efficiency. If you look at most of the range numbers on fueleconomy.gov for EVs, oftentimes you will see multiple different ratings for different versions of the vehicle that have the only difference is the size of the wheels. The e-tron, you can look at that one and you can see for the standard 19-inch wheels and then a different range number for the 21-inch wheels. Same thing goes for a lot of others, because you do lose range with those bigger wheels. So, you know, it's probably, I think with EVs, I don't think we'll go a whole lot smaller. You know, I don't think we'll go much below 17 or 18 inches in most cases. Except maybe on some entry level vehicles, but it may hopefully put a damper on how big they get.
Yeah, and you don't need giant for most of the EVs. You don't need giant, you know, calipers and pistons because you have so much braking coming from the motor, from regenerative braking.
Yeah.
So another fun thing about EVs, you don't change the brake pads as often because the motor's slowing you down.
Yeah. All right. That's all we've got for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back next week, hopefully with Nicole joining us again.
Bye.
Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.